If you're struggling to attract new staff or your team is experiencing burnout, pick up your phone and call Guardian Vets. Through virtual team solutions like after-hour triage, daytime virtual receptionists, callbacks, and telemedicine, Guardian Vets can help you have happy staff, happy clients, and a thriving business. Go to www.guardianvets.com and check Veterinary Success Podcast in the Where Did You Hear About Us section to get a free consultation and receive 50% off your first month of service. Don't wait. Check out GuardianVets.com now.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Veterinary Success Podcast. I'm your host, Isaiah Douglas, and I'm excited that you're here. And with that, we're going to jump into this week's podcast here in just a second. We're going to hit up our sponsors that help make the show possible. There's lots of companies that I believe in that I think help veterinarians across the board, whether it's find a job, hire talent, become more efficient in their practice, all those things, right? So these sponsors mean a ton to me. So I know a lot of people will fast forward or skip through them. But if and when you're looking for help and some of the solutions they offer, I would highly, highly encourage you to check them out. And so with that, no further ado, jump into the ads and we'll get right into the show. So thank you for listening and enjoy. We all know as a practice owner, one of the last things you want to think about is tax planning and strategizing for your practice. In addition, the long list of tasks on your radar, it's really hard to do everything. You have to find a trustworthy team of experts that understands the unique and specific needs within veterinary medicine. My suggestion would be my friends at Granite Peak Associates. Granite Peak is an advanced tax planning and veterinary practice advisory firm who has spent many years working within VetMed. Their team works year-round to make sure you're able to maximize your profitability while also minimizing your liabilities. Whether you're in the process of purchasing a practice, looking to grow your practice, or transitioning towards the sale of your practice, they are the experts to help guide you through. What makes them different than other firms is their devotion to proactive tax planning. By thinking into the future and creating long-lasting relationships with their clients, Granite Peak can help minimize the amount of taxes paid over the course of many years to come. Head over to their website, granitepeakcpa.com, to receive a personalized comparison of your practice financials against over 140 other hospitals that they've worked with. You'll be able to see how your practice ranks, where you stack up, and where the opportunities are to get better. From there, you can schedule a one-on-one call with one of the members of their team to review and analyze your results. The opportunity speaks for itself. You need someone on your side. Granite Peak Associates is that team. Take advantage of their innovative expertise within the veterinary industry. Have you ever walked into a space and thought, wow, this place is beautiful? There's a reason for that. Architecture has this innate ability to impact emotions and perceptions. My friends at Apex Design Build bring beautiful and functional spaces for veterinarians nationwide. Apex is a fourth generation family run company that is fully integrated from the design, architecture, and construction process. They help you mitigate risk, eliminate surprises, save time, save money, and reduce your efforts. Sounds great. Check out their amazing work and have access to their square footage calculator to help you plan out your expansion or new build. Click the link in the show notes for the exclusive offer and learn more about Apex Design Build. Discover the nation's fastest growing practice management software. Who, you might ask? It's my friends at Shepherd Veterinary Software. Founded by a practicing veterinarian, Shepherd is easy to learn and works the way you work. Shepherd automatically updates the medical records, adds services to the invoice, generates discard instructions, and so much more. It's time to bring home more stories and less stress. Learn more today at www.shepherd.vet. Finding a job or finding a veterinarian shouldn't be a waste of time. Enter an Offer First. Paul Diaz and team have created something really special with Offer First. Some of my favorite reasons are as follows. Candidates and employers will both have values aligned on the first step, not the last. The sign-up process, quick and simple, no resume required. So if you're looking for a job, but you aren't really sure, it's as easy as scrolling on Zillow for a home. And finally, if you have a great match, it's based on your each unique requirements, not random keywords. If you want to learn more, listen to episode 179 with Paul Diaz. We cover all of that. The other exclusive great thing that you're going to get from this ad read and from Paul is I convinced him to give an exclusive discount to listeners of this podcast. So for owners, you're getting a 20% discount on both the placement of any candidate, but also access to the platform. Use VSP if you go to Offer First, or the easiest way is a link in the show notes. So check it out. associates, those looking for a job, same thing. Use the link in the show notes. Use VSP if you go directly to offer first. But I will donate and Paul will donate to a veterinary nonprofit of your choosing. So each person that signs up gets a vote. Your votes actually count, which is incredible. And so I'll be reaching out. I will handle that. But there's going to be a donation made for any associate or any job seeker that adds on the platform. We want to make sure that not only does the platform help to make sure that you find a better fit, better culture, better role, but it's also doing good in veterinary medicine. Okay, so link in the show notes is going to take you to Offer First. It's going to automatically apply that, but also use code VSP if you go to Offer First directly. And Offer First is changing the game of veterinary recruiting. I want each and every one of you to benefit from it, so check them out today.
All right. And we're back. And on this episode, I am joined by Dr. Stephanie Van Dynes Snell. She is a veterinarian and a business owner and also a high flow coach and consultant. She talks about business, wellness, flow state, leadership, and team culture. All things that I like. Flow state, I need to learn a little bit more, but I've got a brief little intro. We're going to get into that. Her experience in the trenches and going through kind of growth and leadership as an owner make this a really interesting conversation I'm excited to have. Stephanie, thanks for joining me on the show.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah. So I know you've been on a couple other veterinary podcasts. So some people might have seen your appearance, but there's going to be a lot of people that don't know who you are. And I know it's like the, talking about like history and all that other stuff again, and you've done it lots. But if you were to give an overview, personal, professional, like how you got to where you are today, What would you share? What has been kind of meaningful in shaping how you've become the person you are today?
Yeah, for sure. So I actually grew up on a dairy farm. So I was with animals and, you know, kind of in nature and outside a lot from a young age. That's where I kind of got like my work ethic, and I had a lot of responsibility at a young age, like a lot of farm kids do. But I decided to go into vet school when I was in university. I was actually in university for biochemistry. I was going down that path, and I remember working in the labs in my last year, and I was like, I can't do this. Like, this is, I'm not going to work in a basement on a, you know, an experiment that's going to take 3 years, and who knows, I can't, it's just the pace wasn't for me. But I had started volunteering at a vet clinic, and I was like, I love this. Like, the pace, the problem solving, the human animal bond was all very exciting for me. So yeah, I applied, I got into vet school. And then I met my husband, and then we graduated vet school. He was a year ahead of me. And then we very quickly bought a practice. So that was always something we had wanted to do. We wanted to get into business. And yeah, and then we started our family right away, and it was a lot all at once. So I basically kind of hit a wall around, I don't know, probably like maybe 8 years ago. And I was like, okay, well, someone has to run this business. Our kids are very strong-willed, high energy. They don't really sleep, which I'm sure a lot of people understand what that's like. So I was just kind of up against the wall, and I was like, I need to really focus on this business. I felt a lot of responsibility for really the team in particular. I was like, you know, if they're coming here to work for us, yeah, I know we're paying them, but at the same time, I still wanted it to be a really good workplace. And then I started to see a lot of like the chronic and ongoing problems that, you know, the whole industry was kind of facing. And my problem solving brain kind of started to get, yeah, kind of honed in on that. And I'm like, well, what can we do? What kind of systemic change needs to happen? So while I kind of started working on some stuff within our own business, our own clinic, I just recently was also, well, how do I also reach people to kind of help them, support them in their growth and development? And, you know, my ultimate goal is basically to like support people, be their best selves, because I truly believe that's what we deserve as people, but also what the world needs, because when we're our best selves, then you start seeing those ripple effects out to the world. So that's kind of what happened. So I actually stopped practicing as a vet about maybe 6 years ago, just because it like all got a little bit too much. And that was one thing, we had multiple vets at that point, and I was like, you know, I need to work on the business. I want to work on these other passions. And it was hard to do that. There's still some, yeah, kind of, you feel like a failure a little bit, some ego death or like identity death with like hanging up your stethoscope. But at the same time, looking back, it's exactly what we needed for the business, and it's the right path for me. So does that kind of answer your question? That was a lot.
No, it's perfect. And it's interesting. even just like you being raised on a dairy farm, I was raised on a hog farm, and just the idea of like the blue collar mindset and like working at an early age and just having chores and doing different things, it does shape a lot of what you do into the future and just how you look at the world. And I think about that with my own kids, because probably similar to you, right? Your kids are not raised in the same environment, I would imagine, right? It's probably slightly different than where you were raised. And it's like, how do you still instill some of those things that were positives for you, but also giving them opportunities that are maybe different that can help that you've learned over time? So completely off topic, but it's just one of those things that I think about a lot.
So true. Yeah.
And then the idea of the failure thing, I think is interesting, because it's almost this idea of maybe it is, I'm good at this, I'm skilled, I can help the world being a veterinarian, but that's not what I need to do. And this like internal conflict of, well, you should do it because you spend a lot of time and energy, right? Studying, all these money, all this stuff. And then you're just going to quit. Like, why are you going to quit? You should just keep doing this forever. And trying to be comfortable with making that big change is, yeah, it's hard. Was there any, you know, whether it was your husband, other friends, people around you that kind of gave you some words of wisdom, some guidance? Was it something that you felt like you knew right away, or did it take some time?
It was hard, actually, I would say. In the last few years, I feel like the support that's available for people that want to kind of do things a little bit different is there, because there is more support for people like actually looking at what is my purpose in life? What are my values? What is my passion? And actually, you know, living in alignment with that. And I feel like there's a lot more support like in the last few years, especially maybe something happened with the pandemic. But when I started wanting to go that direction, it was actually really lonely. There wasn't a lot of people who understood. It was like, well, exactly like you said, like you went to school for this. Why are you like now focusing on business and like entrepreneurship and like leadership and like organizational culture? But at the same time, you know, I was kind of a mess, honestly. I was just like in such, like I was in this like this state of super high functioning anxiety. And I was like, something has to give, or who knows, right? So that was just a decision I kind of made for myself. And I think that's where, you know, my kind of heart breaks for the industry and like for the people within the vet industry and like larger healthcare and really all over the world, is like when you don't have that, not necessarily like the ability, but when it's like the support just isn't there, or like maybe the upbringing was a certain way where you don't feel strong enough to be able to make that decision for yourself. So it's like, how do we support people and actually, yeah, kind of through that, because that's when people live their best lives. So it was actually really lonely. And my husband too, like he's such an amazing vet, but he was like, yeah, like we need to do vet stuff. We have a business, we need to produce. But I definitely saw like the bigger picture. And I think this happens to like a lot of people with that, you know, kind of entrepreneurial mindset, right? It's like, you do see the bigger picture, the bigger vision of what's possible if you do step out of your lane and kind of like start doing things a little bit differently. So I think those people, I was purposeful over time to seek out, you know, kind of other people who were doing things differently within Vet Matter Beyond, because yeah, you really need that support system. Even as business owners that are still practicing, we need a support system of people who understand what it's like to do that. Because again, like fewer and fewer people really understand what it's like as you kind of go from, even from like vet student to vet and different types of vet, and then vet business and vet ownership and all of that as well. So yeah, you have to be super purposeful about curating your kind of, yeah, kind of circle of support.
I agree on the, you know, what happened through pandemic, COVID, whatever you want to call it. There was a reshaping of what do we care about? What do we value? Mm-hmm. I mean, there's been a resurgence of people looking for meaning. So, you know, people going back to maybe the way they were raised, whether it's religious views or other things, of like coming back to saying like, there are things that maybe have slipped or I've not focused on, or maybe I don't want to be as busy as I was before.
Yeah.
And that's reshaped a lot. And I've had conversations with people privately and also on this podcast about that. It is interesting. I think everyone feels that.
Yeah. And it's good. I think it's definitely
healthy.
Positive.
It really is.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a little bit, you know, kind of this uncomfortable shift and the people and like the holding on of kind of the old way of doing things. But like, yeah, I think ultimately it's definitely a positive.
I think there was a recalibration of how much BS people will put up with. And some people are like, I'm not going back to what I used to say okay to. And now it's like, that's a no for me. Like I'm in a good enough spot to do that. But to your point, I think some of that is being able from a financial perspective to feel comfortable saying like, if this goes this way, can I give myself, it's almost like a pressure relief valve, right? Like you need a way to let some of that pressure out so that then you can do some other things. But with that, you've talked about like living best life or peak performance from a veterinary perspective. And again, I know it's going to depend, but how do you kind of define that? For someone hearing that, they're like, well, what does that really mean?
And I guess, and this is interesting, I was having this conversation yesterday with someone, and you know, we do a lot of like wellness, or like we have like the resources available in the clinic, like workplace wellness and like wellness materials. And then we really focus on like the team culture and all of these things. But there's this huge piece missing, I think, right before that happens. And that's that leading self. Are we feeling whole as individuals and well individually, and like not only physically, right, but also like mentally, spiritually? Like, do we feel we are, have a good understanding of like what we actually want, what are our values? And then also things like having a growth mindset, having this, you know, kind of locus of control that's like an internal locus of control. Like, we actually understand that we can control more within our environments than a lot of people feel. You know, sometimes people are like, oh, well, it just happens, so what's the point in trying? But it's like, those are actually small little pieces that you can cultivate to actually really look at things differently. And it's like such a powerful thing when you can like shift your perspective. And that is one of the most powerful things I think you can do. And it all starts with awareness. So those are the pieces where I'm like, you know, it begins with awareness. Like, okay, I kind of feel crappy, so what can I do here? And it's like, okay, well, my perception is this, but your perception is your reality, but you can shift your perception if you're aware that that is kind of what's running your show. So it's, yeah, kind of this piece when you look at peak performance, it's like, that's the initial piece. And when you look at peak performance, it's basically just like wanting to feel your best, and then you perform your best. And it really pulls in these different areas of psychology. So people hear of like positive psychology basics, or there's like cognitive behavioral basics. And that's like kind of where the growth mindset comes in, with like the cognitive behavioral stuff. But then like the positive psychology basics are like sleeping, eating. Do you have some kind of mindfulness practice? Are you exercising? And those are the pieces I feel like we miss, or we just kind of skirt over. It's like, yeah, make sure you sleep. But it's like, okay, well, actually, let's dig into like what's causing you to have difficulty sleeping, and getting rid of those kind of limiting beliefs as well around a lot of those things. So anyway, that's kind of the whole piece I feel like sometimes we're missing, but that's what peak performance is for me. And I know like it's like a whole field that they really focus on with athletics. In sports, it's like a common thing. It's like, okay, peak performance for athletes. The same with executives and huge corporations, they do peak performance training. But it's a really exciting opportunity, I think, to like look at this. Well, like, how can this work in the realm of the vet industry, human healthcare, all of these different things? So anyway, that's kind of like a new exciting thing that I think could make such a huge difference in actually helping us get to the root of the problems that we're seeing. And it's not just the vet industry. Like, it's like the world as a whole could use this kind of stuff. But I mean, my focus is the vet industry. Sure. But yeah.
It makes sense. Again, that's it to the audience. And I do think there are times where there's things said like, oh, the vet industry. I'm like, no, that's like a more like a societal, or just yes, like all workplace challenges, where it's not so unique to vet med as many people think. They're like, oh, well, this is a vet med issue. Well, yeah, because you work in that industry, you see it. But if you worked in other industries, you would see it the same way. And it is a pervasive problem. So that's interesting.
Yeah, it really is. And I think that's where it's hard, because it's like, whose responsibility is it then, right? To like really set up these vet professionals for success. Is it society? Is it, you know, but then at this, is it the schools? Is it the associations? Like, at what level? Is it the employers? At what level do we like do a better job actually setting up these individuals for success? But I think that's where it's like, oh, well, you know, it's not up to us, it's up to society. But at the same time, there is that kind of responsibility. We have a huge influence as vet clinic owners, vets, vet techs, to our communities, to the people we work with. So there has to be someone at some stage that takes responsibility and kind of says like, okay, let's do a better job with these types of things. And we've seen it with like the wellness and everything already. And I mean, I think we do a really good job as a vet industry, but like I was saying, I think we just miss that key piece of like leading self first and kind of training that and helping people change, like feel empowered to change and actually support them through that. Because I think that's what deep down most people want. It's just very difficult.
Yeah, I think it's an interesting way to think about it, because there is all this, like, well, we need to do this, we need to do this, versus saying there is some ownership that each individual needs to take, and you can't outsource that. Sorry. If you don't like that, it's going to be the same in life. You can't expect the government or your family, or like, there are certain things that are there to help support you. There are certain things done that are beneficial, but at the end of the day, the buck stops with you, and you have to take ownership. And if you're always deferring that, you probably will always have these issues and struggles, because you're saying like, I have no control over anything, which we can get into that. Like there are a lot of things that are luck and chance and things that happen, but ultimately you cannot outsource like everything that happens to you, that it's bad luck or it's someone else's fault, because that is, to me, what creates a victim mindset that is just such a dangerous trap to get into. And it's not a vet med issue. It's just a humanity issue, I feel like, at times.
It completely is. That's exactly it. And like, yeah, the victim mindset. Because, and like, how I came to this realization is, for years I tried to, and of course I still try to, because it does help, but create this like really strong team culture, really strong organizational systems that support employees, and you know, that they're feeling confident in their roles, and that we really uphold this standard of, this is how we treat people here. And I put a lot of work into that. And I was still seeing, you know, it's people not succeed, because when they don't want to do those things, it's like, you can lead a horse to water, you can have the best workplaces, and you're still going to see people getting burnt out if they're not taking responsibility for those contributing pieces that are individual only, like all the positive psychology things. I can't make my employees sleep well at night. I can't make them engage in, you know, what we call active recovery. I can't make them engage in exercise and mindfulness practices. You can suggest it, but it's like the old saying, you can lead a horse to water, you can't make them drink. So that's kind of where, at the end of the day, I had this realization. I was like, okay, well, yeah, you can have the best workplaces and you're still going to see these problems if like we can't get to this initial level of human wholeness and like wellness and awareness of like what actually contributes to not doing well versus doing well. So
have you had any success with seeing someone on the team change, of going from like, I'm going to outsource everything, to like bringing it in? And was that part of the culture and systems? And I kind of want to get into some of that, but whether it's a story and you want to change the names and use Isaiah as the person, whatever it is, right? Like, is there anything there that you want to share that was helpful or would maybe be beneficial to other veterinary owners or leaders that could take away?
Yeah, two different things come to mind. So I remember like we had an employee once, it did not work out with this individual, but the main problem was this lack of, or, you know, kind of just a complete inability to take personal responsibility for their own self in the situation. You know, there was some not getting along with their team members, some mistakes, but it was all like, well, it's because of this, it's because of you. And I said, you know what, we want feedback. Like, we want that feedback because we want to do better, but you still have to take responsibility for your role in this. They didn't think they had to, right? Like, it was just very, and it was like, well, that's my perception, and perception is reality, which I already said. And I was like, but you can change your perception. And it was just like, they couldn't. So it didn't work, right? So that was, in those moments is when it's so frustrating, because I wish, again, as like a business owner and just as like an employer, that I could spend more time with those people and just like really help them to see, because it's just such a game changer when you can like shift your perspective like that, like your perception, and then your perspective shifts, right? But with that individual, I wasn't able to. And that was just such kind of like an aha moment for me. I'm like, there's nothing I can do if someone's unwilling, if someone is not willing to like shift their perspective or engage in what other people's perspectives might be. If that's all they see is their perspective, there's nothing I can do. So that's kind of one thing that I think is like, we put a lot of pressure on ourselves as employers because we really do care. And we think, well, what are we doing wrong? What are we doing wrong? But at the end of the day, it's like, that's a you problem. So it's just kind of identifying these moments and these situations where like, okay, this is what I can do, but that's a you problem. And kind of feeling confident in that, because I think sometimes like we're really hard on ourselves as employers. I know like most of us are. And like, we really do want to see our team do well, but sometimes in those situations, there is like literally nothing you can do if they're not going to see it that way. Yeah. So that's one of them. And then we've definitely had employees come in with a chip on their shoulder, right? It's because they come from a team or a clinic where the culture, they were allowed to basically engage in behavior that wasn't conducive to like a psychologically safe environment, right? Because that's always one thing we talk about. It's like, does this contribute to a psychologically safe environment or not? And if it doesn't, we don't do that here. So that's where, you know, they come in and they think it's okay to like whisper with someone else in the corner. They think it's okay to like voice disgruntlement about a client or another team member openly, right? And it's like, then through some conversations, some coaching and some training on actually, like, this is what a psychologically safe environment is. And when we do these things, it, like, negatively impacts everyone around us. And we have important work to do here with our animals and our clients. And we need to put all of our energy into that. We don't need to be creating this, like, super uptight and toxic environment. Like, that just doesn't help anybody. So yeah, we've been able to, for sure, kind of encourage some people to look at things differently. So that's the thing, right? But they come in willing, they come in open to learning like that. That's been super rewarding. And I would say most people were able to encourage them to kind of, yeah, see things differently that way and get used to that environment, because it feels good, right? So it is, like, once you see how much better it feels, it's like, oh my God, like, yeah, this is what I want. And I want to contribute to that. I don't want to take away from that environment. So that's been really encouraging. But then I'll say the other thing I find is humans are humans. So natural human behavior is, if, yeah, there isn't that constant, you know, kind of like leadership, accountability, things will crumble. But again, especially if, like, the things like positive psychology basics aren't in place, right? If they're not doing well kind of outside of work, it's harder to, like, kind of uphold that standard while you're at work. So it's, yeah, one of those constant things that you always have to be like, this is how we do things here. Yep, we still do things like this. We're still going to be kind to each other, just like last week. You know, it's kind of, so it is a constant. And that's where, like, strong leadership comes in as well.
The job's never done, I think, is the key thing. It's similar to, it's a biblical analogy, but you think about, like, the Israelites, they leave Egypt and they wander through the desert and they've seen all these miracles, all these different things that happen, and they still have all these issues. It's like human nature is, we're going to complain. We're always going to be upset. And we have these reminders that could literally just happen. Great day, awesome stuff, everything went. And then it's like, well, now it's Thursday and things stink again. And now we're going to complain about all the bad things. It's like, yeah, from a leadership perspective, it's not like, hey, we implemented these things. I heard about this. We did it and we're good. It's like, you can't check out, right? So
exactly
that, from a feedback perspective, I wanted to ask you about, of hearing from the team where you talked about the one situation that didn't work out, right? The feedback was basically, hey, I will take no responsibility. It's everyone else. How do you get honest and real feedback? Because I think from a leadership perspective, sometimes people are timid to maybe speak candidly. And there's certain times where, like that example, hey, this isn't really good feedback because, like, there's other issues. How have you been able to, from a culture or a systems perspective, be able to solicit good feedback to say, okay, this is what we needed to change. I need to do better. And I will own that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's where, like, all the leaders need to be really responsible for, like, their role in that kind of self-leadership thing, right? And, like, really responsible in the fact that they need to be a safe place to come. And you need to be able to shift your perspective to, like, wanting to learn. Like, feedback is good because then we can do better. So it's really leaning into that instead of feeling like, oh, they're going to give me feedback, they think I suck, or like, oh, they're giving me feedback, they're always complaining. Like, it's, and like, we always say, we're like, okay, like, if, like, you feel yourself complaining, like, we want to hear about that, but complaining doesn't help. You know, it's like, you can complain with feedback because we all want to work together and like, we want to hear this. So I think that's the main thing, is just like constantly reminding them, making sure like the systems are in place and like the avenues to provide feedback, because sometimes they want it to be anonymous, right? Which is fair. So we have like an anonymous feedback system, but then we also have in-person, you know, there's a few different ways people can give feedback and, you know, kind of, you know, if they have ideas, like to share ideas and that type of thing. So, but yeah, it kind of starts with making sure that the leaders really do want the feedback. Like, they actually see it as a positive, that they tell people, we see it as a positive. It's part of the culture. We have it kind of right in our value statements. It's like, we want to have a culture of continuous improvement. So to accomplish that, we need to create a psychologically safe environment so that people feel safe speaking up. And then we have the systems in place for people to provide feedback. So that's kind of, yeah, like, you need to have the systems in place, but then you also need to, like, be living and breathing it as well. It needs to come from a place of, you know, kind of, yeah, like, you're like authentically wanting it. So, because otherwise people can feel it. If you don't authentically want the feedback, they're going to be like, oh no, they made a face when I said that. I'm never doing that again. Right? It's, yeah.
Any examples of changing the way the system is? Like, is it during a, you know, quarterly or annual review? Is it the anonymous stuff? Like, hey, here's a box, drop notes in. Is it something online? Anything there that you feel like would be helpful for others to look at?
We have a digital system because we have a larger team. Like, we have roughly 50 employees at any given time. So we moved to Microsoft and we have the whole Microsoft suite with like the teams and everything. So we have we use the form. So we have like Microsoft form that basically we have like the QR, the code, and that's posted all over the clinic. So basically, if they're in the lunchroom and they're like, oh, okay, I feel really crappy about this, I feel like I should say something, they can scan it and they can send it in. So there's that route. Each team has their team lead. So because of the size, we have kind of like this middle layer of management now as well, and middle layer of like kind of that leadership team for more focused leadership within the hospital assistant team, the RVT team, which is like the tech team. I think you guys call it a little bit different in the US, but and then also the vet team leads, and then the office team, marketing team, we have the inventory, like just kind of those types of things. So they have their team lead that they can go to. And that also allows to, like, let's say someone, it helps with accountability as well. So let's say there's an assistant that sees, you know, one of the techs do something questionable. Instead of like in that moment trying to address it or figure out what to do, they can just like check in with like their team lead, you know, that person's team lead, and be like, hey, can you double check that they know how to do this properly? Because I saw this. And then at least, you know, they can say that, or they can send a message on Teams quickly. And that way things get addressed a little bit more quickly as well. So, and again, it's all with the intention to help, right? And that's what we try to instill in people as soon as they're employed with us. It's part of the onboarding process. It's like, you know, we have a culture of continuous improvement and we want to see you thrive. So like we have this feedback systems, and it's all with the intention to like help you do your best while you're here. So just really trying to bring that home. But it's still hard for some people. And I find even with all these systems, like we'll still see people complaining amongst each other without using the avenues to give feedback, because again, it's human nature, which is kind of unfortunate, right? Like that's human nature. And it's, you know, there's a reason that people gossip. And so you have to be so intentional about being like, no, like that's not how I want to show up. And it's, yeah. So again, that all comes from the individual level, though. You can have the best systems in the world, and if the individual doesn't want to use them and they still want to revert back to that kind of human nature, bad habits that we all get as we grow up and are subject to society, then it's hard. So, yeah.
So we talked about even just how people have kind of changed perspectives of what they want, and the idea of almost like more flexibility. And that's one thing that you kind of highlighted just within veterinary medicine, of trying to be more flexible. And I think it kind of fits with also feedback from the team of trying to understand like what they're looking for and being flexible, whether it's a schedule, whether it's the systems. Yeah. How have you embraced that? How have you looked at it? How's it changed over time as someone that runs a fairly good sized business?
Yeah. And that one too, I think we were one of the first companies, I think lots of people do it now, but we, I don't even know how many years ago, we were noticing that the vets in particular, you know, they would schedule 5 days a week, and those 8 hour days often turned into 10 hour days just because of the nature of the work. So it was like, well, let's try actually only 4 days, but 10 hour days. And then that way, it's like, you're not even here that day to get sucked into a bunch of extra stuff, that whole extra day, you're not even here. So we switched to that a long time ago, and it was really encouraging to see a lot of other clinics also considering it. But with that said, we still also have some vets that are like, no, I want to work 8 days a week, but like shorter days, or right. So like whatever really works for them. And we were able to match them up with like the support team that also kind of wanted to do those schedules. So I will say our scheduling is really, it can be intense sometimes. The people that do the scheduling, they're like, oh my goodness, all these like different accommodations for different people. But I really do think it makes a big difference. So yeah, so we've done that kind of stuff. But then at the end of the day, as an employer, you know, you need to meet the demand of your clients. There are still times, of course, where it's like, okay, no one wants to work a Saturday, obviously. So like, we're just going to split them up. Everyone's going to do one every few weeks or whatever it is. The same with, you know, kind of like the evening shifts, and they're not even that late. Like I think the latest we're open is until like maybe 7 or 6:30 actually. So it's like, yeah, you have to take your turns if no one else wants to do it. So that's kind of what we've done. And we've kind of done what we call job crafting, is the exercise that we do. And it is basically that. It's like, what do you like for a schedule? What do you like to actually do? Like, do you like doing surgery? Do you like doing medicine? Do you like hate doing dentistry, but you like doing surgery? So just that kind of stuff. So yeah, job crafting with regards to like scheduling, but also what do you want to be doing while you're here? And then what that allows us to do is, if with the team, so like the hospital assistants will do this, the RPTs will do this. And then as a team, they're looking at this and they're like, oh my God, no one likes doing, I don't know, say anal glands or whatever. Like no one likes doing them. So it's like, okay, well, we'll all just chip in and do what we can then, right? Versus thinking like, oh, it's always me that gets stuck with these, or I hate doing these, you know, or whatever it is. But when they see that like no one likes doing something, or if maybe there's someone who loves doing them, it's like, great, give them all to that person. This is perfect, because then they're enjoying their time and, yeah, I don't know, that kind of stuff. And when you enjoy what you do a better job. So it's just a natural, it's like a win-win, really. So yeah, those are kind of the two ways we've done that.
Yeah, I love that. And one of the things that I think was part of you, you know, hanging up the stethoscope, right, and kind of moving on was the coaching piece of it. And we haven't talked as much about that. So let's talk a little bit about this idea of high flow coaching, why it's important and why it's not some like rah-rah thing, which is just me saying that. Because you'll hear people that'll talk about this or that, and it's like, it's great for them. And then other people hear it and they're like, I think you like drank Kool-Aid when you went to this one meeting. And now like you're so obsessed with this one way of doing things that doesn't work for me. I think it's really weird. Can you talk a little about, because that was one thing that stuck out to me in our previous conversation was, hey, this is why I think it works, but then this is kind of the evidence behind it. And I think that speaks volumes to a lot of your peers as well that are scientific evidence-based folks that look for that to say, okay, I can latch onto that. And I do think this improves life.
Yeah, for sure. So like I was saying, I had this like quest to understand how to best support people in being their best selves, because I was realizing even if we have this great workplace, it's still not enough. And I don't mean to say like we have the best workplace. I mean, we're still working on things. I don't want to make it sound like it's this absolute unicorn practice. And I mean, there's still lots of things I want to improve. I just wanted to say that.
Oh, totally. And, and anyone that would say that, I'd be like, I know. That's nice.
Exactly.
I'm sure you're wrong.
Yeah, exactly.
We get your team on here and they can talk.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, so then last fall, I knew I kind of wanted to do like some kind of coaching certification because I really wanted to see these outcomes, but I didn't really know how. Like, how do I reach people more effectively? So I knew I wanted to do my coaching. And when I was looking at all the different programs available, the one that came up was this one through the Flow Research Collective. And it was a high flow coaching, kind of training certification. And so the Flow Research Collective is basically all the research goes into like the flow state. And if you're not familiar with the flow state, it's basically like being in the zone. And I think everyone kind of is like, oh yes, I remember that one time when I was really in the zone, super absorbed. Maybe it seemed like the time went really slow or really fast. You were so absorbed. You weren't worrying about like what other people might think. You were just like so into it and you were super productive, maybe super creative, and it felt really good. So like that's what the flow state is. It's actually measurable. So this is the thing with this whole research collective is they're doing all this kind of research on it, which is great because then we can actually pinpoint these areas so that we can intentionally achieve these flow states more often and consistently and sustainably. So when we get in the zone or into these flow states, it is actually pretty depleting. Like it depletes your neurochemistry because it is pretty intense. So the other thing I love about this whole concept of the flow state and being in flow is that to be able to sustainably get into these states to be, you know, super productive and feel super great in your work, your whole environment has to support that. There's what they call a flow cycle. And a huge piece of that is what they call active recovery. And you'll hear some people talk about it, but it's basically the opposite of passive recovery. And if you think of what passive recovery is, it's like coming home from work and lying on the couch and watching Netflix and maybe having a drink, eating and just zoning out. And that's okay too. But the problem is that doesn't replenish neurochemicals, neurobiology the same way as active recovery does. So active recovery is like getting out in nature, mindfulness, exercise, sleeping well, those types of things, all the positive psychology basics, like I was mentioning. So that's what I kind of loved about this so much. It's like, yeah, we need to be well and whole and have this strong foundation. And then from there, we can look at, well, okay, now how can we optimize for these flow states? So that was really exciting to me. It's like working with our biology to basically help us reach higher potential, higher levels, be better people for ourselves, for others, that type of thing. Because there's also group flow as well. So you can get into these kind of flow states as a group. And I think, I don't know, as people listen, they'll be like, oh yeah, I remember a time when like everything just seemed to click. And the whole idea with flow is basically like one decision just flows effortlessly from the next. You're not sitting there like thinking, oh, what should I do here? What should I do here? You just kind of know. And it's like this like rapid decision making. the decisions aren't always right because like when you're making decisions quickly, and that's just life in general, you can hem and haw over a decision forever and it can still not be the right one. But still, it's like this effortless, like, okay, now we need to do this. Okay, now you need to go do that. Okay, I'm going to do this now. Okay, I'm going to send off this. And yeah, there's like a certain conditions that are conducive to that and certain environment and certain foundation. And I think that's what's so exciting about it, because it's all this like low hanging fruit, like they say, that we could do so many things, make so many small changes within our clinics, within our own lives, to reach that potential, to get into those flow states or into those like flowy environments. And then there's obviously some that would take a little bit more time and structural systemic change. But yeah, that's kind of, I got really excited about it once I got into it. And they call it peak performance training, but that's basically it. And I was like, oh, this whole concept of like peak performance training for vet professionals, it's just like really exciting, because it's not something we've ever really looked at before that I've seen. So anyway, and yeah, so when I started learning about it, I'm like, this might be it. This might be the thing that actually helps us get to the bottom of things and be better people. So yeah.
Yeah, I think when we chatted before, it felt like if you've played sports, you see people that are like in the zone. And that's one way to equate it for those that maybe haven't. And there's going to be certain work environments where maybe you don't get in that state
right
at all, mm-hmm. or it's really hard. I think that's the part that's tricky. And you talked about it a little bit, how to like make those adjustments. And can you talk about, like, again, going back to the idea of outsourcing versus looking at it internally, if you're not the leader of the team and you don't control all the environment, how can you make tweaks or adjustments to help get into flow state when it's, you know, like, is there things that each individual can do to make it help come along a little bit easier? Or is it something that is more environmentally based and they have to kind of outsource that? Does that make sense, what I'm trying to
ask? Yeah, it does. And I think that's where it comes back to, like, almost all of it is individual. And then hopefully we can also create workspaces that support and help people get into flow. So there's, you know, the saying, the more you flow, the more you flow. And a lot of those kind of flowy activities at home, like playing sports, music is a big one. Even just like walking out in nature, getting really absorbed in like a book, those types, or in community. So having a really good conversation with a good friend where, you know, you're just completely absorbed. And those are the types of things that really replenish and create this foundation that you're able to get into flow more likely in the future as well. So, I mean, there's different types of flow. There's all kinds of things we can get into, but there's different, you know, there's like this like macro flow, which is kind of what you think of like, whoa, I was so in the zone, completely absorbed in this sport I was playing or this musical instrument or whatever it was. But when you're at work, it's more likely to be this controlled flow. So it is a little bit intentional. There's like what they call kind of like a struggle phase before you get into flow, where it's like, oh, things are grinding a little bit. But once you can kind of get over that struggle phase, then you're like in flow. But you need an environment that is like withholding distractions. So that's a big one. So I like the classic example, and I think many people can resonate with this, is like when you're in surgery, and often we get in flow with surgery, right? We're not really thinking too much. We're like, okay, this is happening. Now I need to do this. And you're absorbed in the surgery. And then all of a sudden, maybe like a receptionist comes and Mrs. Jones is on the phone, and you're kind of like, what does she need? And then you're knocked out of flow. So it's like this whole thing where it's like actually talking to the team. And this is something we haven't done with our team yet either, because it's all kind of new. But it's like when you see someone that's like absorbed, and like we have talked to them about like, okay, don't bother the vets when they're in surgery unless it's like absolutely urgent. You leave it as a message. So we have systems in place like that to like allow people to focus on like what they're focusing on. But yeah, it's all like a focus game and like a eliminating distractions game. So that's kind of it, but it definitely starts at the individual level, creating that foundation and then doing the active recovery stuff at home. And that's something else that's exciting about the workplace, is how do we incorporate these active recovery breaks and support people in getting enough active recovery at work as well. But most of that has to happen at home. There's this, I have to share this because it's so funny whenever I think about it, but the recommended, what they call active recovery protocol for ultimate peak performance, it's three small recovery breaks throughout every day. And then after, they say 6 days, you need a whole day that like you're doing active recovery. After 3 weeks, you need something like 4 days. And after 3 months, you need like 10 days. And then after a year, you need 2 weeks. So like that is way more time off than anyone ever takes, right? So that's something I'm super curious about. I was like, if we could implement that into our schedules, what would be the outcomes? Because I mean, they've done the studies they've done, but like not in healthcare settings. But anyway, so this is where I'm like, yeah, it's kind of this like, kind of like, what can we do now? And like, how can we implement these things in the workplace? But then yeah, also support people on an individual level too. So it's definitely both, I would say.
Yeah. The amount of time off makes me think of the jokes that Americans will make about Europeans taking all these vacations all the time.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, and again, there's all these productivity things, but it's like, how productive are you? And like, where's the law of diminishing returns of like just doing so much, but like, are you really gaining much? And there's got to be some kind of balance between that. So it's interesting. But hearing that, it's like, yeah, it's kind of the motto, like, hey, I'm going to be gone. I'm going to be taking a lot of time off. Like, hey, it's the summer. Like, I'll be back in the fall type thing. It's
Like, wow. And it has to be like actual active recovery, right? Like you're going out to like spend a whole day out in nature, maybe with friends, versus like zoning out in front of Netflix for a day. Like it's different because they've actually, again, studied like what is happening in the brain in those two different activities. And when you're watching TV, you're actually still kind of in these beta brain waves, which are actually very much, even like if you're like struggling with something and like using up your brain energy and neurochemicals. So it's actually, it's almost like doing the same thing, but you feel like you're zoned out and relaxing, but it's not actually replenishing. And that's why they call it active recovery, because you're actively doing something at like a physiological level to like get your biology up and ready again to like, again, kind of take on the day again. So yeah, it's super interesting. It's probably, like I said, the science is there, which is like the exciting part.
And it's probably applicable to scrolling on your phone, whether it's social media of some sort, right?
Yeah.
Same way that Netflix would be. So that's not an active recovery, which I mean, I can raise my hand and be guilty on.
Oh, totally. And like, that's the thing too. Like we see it all the time. Our vets have their bank of appointments for the day, and between appointments, it's like, oh, I'll just check. But like that breaks you out of being in flow, because like immediately you're kind of distracted and it's like, okay, well, how do we encourage people to like actually try? And it's funny, cause like my husband's like, he's like, yeah, I've been trying this. Cause like he's super into it too. And he's like, I've been trying this. And he's like, yeah, the morning went so fast. It felt so good. And it's like, if you don't allow yourself to be distracted, like they say, it's like a war on your attention. So it is all about being purposeful about, okay, well, this is trying to get my attention. This is trying to distract me. And again, it's like the awareness piece, right? And it's like, okay, and developing those habits to not succumb to everything that's that we're being subjected to. So it's, yeah.
Interesting. Do they talk anything about like nutrition in flow?
Like, I think nutrition is a funny one, right? Because everyone's so different on what works best for their body. But that was the most of it. It was basically like, yeah, you need to eat foods that are going to support your physical body. And I think that's different a little bit for everyone. I mean, within that course, I haven't learned about it much, but in some other courses or in some other like reading and material and like neuroscience, because now I'm on this, you know, looking at all these different neuroscience based things. But yeah, it's kind of like big meals obviously depress like you're cognitively a little bit, right? So it's a little bit easier to get into flow if you're like fasted, semi-fasted. Hydration is huge if you're even like 1% dehydrated. It's so much harder to focus. So there are some things like that. And I think that's where too, like I've always been a huge proponent of play around with what actually feels good for you. I recently completely cut out drinking coffee because I was like, hey, this is supposed to give me energy. Really, even in the morning, I would have my coffee thinking, okay, it's going to wake me up, but you feel sleepy. And like, I think, you know, there's lots of people like that. So like, give it a try and then you sleep better as well. So there are some things with that. So when we talk about sleep, you know, it's no alcohol before, like even like, yeah, kind of up to 6 hours before you go to sleep. So they're like, if you're going to drink, be a day drinker, which is, again, they're like, you know, if you need to have a drink, drink with lunch. And then caffeine, I think it's like 11 hours before you go to sleep, right? So you really shouldn't be drinking anything after mid-morning for coffee. And then even food. So like no food, like roughly 3 hours before you want to go to sleep, because otherwise then like your body's doing that instead of getting ready to sleep. So, but yeah, other than that, not much for nutrition other than just like those guidelines for as it relates to sleep and focus.
Cool. Does it talk anything about circadian rhythm, which is one thing that I've, okay, interesting. Red light. Does it talk about red light and like the lights, the blue lights off the screens and stuff?
Oh, yeah. So like the blue lights off the screen will impact obviously like your rhythm. But yeah, that's one of the things again, when we talk about sleep. So with the training, it was definitely like we did like a whole day on sleep and like how to coach people through like all these different contributing factors that like make or break a good sleep. And that's one of them, right? Is just like getting outside as early as you can in the morning. And if you can't, that you have some kind of like UV light that you can blast in the morning so that, you get those hours of light that help to set your circadian rhythm. And then always going to sleep at the same time, like trying to actually train your body. Okay, now it's time to sleep, dimming lights at night, that type of stuff.
Interesting. Yeah, there's so much there. It can feel overwhelming because it's like, well, how do you, it's like do one little thing and start making adjustments. You can't go from zero to 100 and expect it to work. It's like, it is an evolving, similar to the feedback and the leadership thing, right? Mm-hmm. Or like, hey, we're culturally, we're going to do this. You have to continually keep on it. So,
yeah. But what's so cool that I've always really loved is like, it's all like the ripple effects or like the upward spiral, right? So if you can start somewhere, just wherever you feel like you can start, then you can from there build off that. So I think that's the biggest thing that I want people to know, that it's not hopeless. It's like, oh, that's too much. Never mind. I'm not going to do anything. It's like, well, where do you think you can start? What is bothering you the most? And like, look maybe at the root cause there and try to actually look back. Well, okay, maybe it's actually a sleep thing, or maybe it's actually there's something with mindset, or like you feel like, oh, what's the point anyway? I have no control, or whatever it is. So that's where it's like, yeah, where can we start? And then build on that. And then from there, the, kind of like the chips start falling into place basically. And it's, it's an upward spiral for sure, but it does take time and habit forming and actually always reminding yourself as to why you want to, right? To keep that like purpose and vision in mind of like wanting to feel better. You know, it's like you always have to do that as well. But yeah.
What haven't I asked about, whether it's on the vet side, on high flow coaching, is there anything kind of on your heart or mind that you feel like we haven't got into, or anything you want to kind of put a bow around?
Sure. I'll speak just off of what I just said. I think a big piece that is missing is people being able to have self-compassion. I see people in the workplace all the time. They give their heart and soul to like the animals, the clients, their team, but it's like, they're so hard on themselves. And I think that's one thing too, especially as like you're trying to build a healthier lifestyle and, you know, kind of like a better, more sustainable life for yourself. You'll have setbacks. You'll have these like, this is so hard. But if you can really foster that kind of self-compassion and be like, okay, well, at least I'm trying, and just like reframing everything in that way, that's such a powerful piece as well to actually be able to make those changes without getting discouraged. Because I know when you're feeling burnt out, with which, you know, a lot of us know what that's like, a lot of us are actively burnt out, you are more negative, more cynical, it's hard. So if all of a sudden someone was like listening to this and thinking, oh my God, now you want me to do all these things, and it's just like, this is too hard, I don't think I can, you can feel so discouraged. So that's where, it's just like, I think it's like the compassion for yourself and just a little bit at a time. And then, like I said, the upward spiral. But yeah, that's something I would share.
Cool. I love it. I always let any guest ask me a question, and I did prompt you before we clicked record. If you have anything, you don't have to have anything. It can be related, unrelated, anything you want to fire back my way after, just peppering you with questions for 50 minutes.
I'm always so curious because you aren't a vet, right?
And correct.
You're like, kind of into the vet industry based on, like your love for vets, I'm assuming. But I guess I always love to hear perspectives or like ideas from people that aren't in the vet world or trained as vets. So like, what's something that you've noticed that maybe based on your experiences from, you know, kind of outside the vet industry that you're curious about, or that you're like, well, like, why don't we just do this? Or, you know, this might be an idea. So I guess it's kind of like throwing that back to you as far as like, do you have any ideas for the industry as far as like what we could do, or maybe, something we're missing?
Sure. I think the biggest thing that, and I mentioned a little bit earlier, is like things that happen in vet med are not just like a vet med only thing, right? You can look at just broader trends from like a big picture, societal, economic stuff that will impact vet med the same way that it impacts other things. Like the idea of the corporatization of vet med, that's happened everywhere else. It is not unique to veterinary medicine. Is it an issue? Is it a challenge? Absolutely. There's positives and negatives of that. I think the idea of being creative in the design and the way that you present yourself to the public is an awesome, unique way, especially as more like de novo startups, or even looking at the opportunities to acquire what would be considered like a no-low practice and completely redesign it. Just we'll use flow, right? Just the way that you do this. And it's not necessarily me, because I always will joke that a lot of what I talk about or what I've say is just swiping ideas from others, which is steal with integrity and pride, and like reconnect these ideas from different spots and then say, I think this makes sense. So there's very few original like Isaiah ideas, if I'm being honest, and it's fine. I don't have to have original ideas. Sometimes it's just connecting different threads and different pieces that maybe were not connected other ways. But yeah, I mean, everyone knows that listens to this show, like I think that private practice medicine is going to do extremely well into the future. I think there is some big trends that say, if you can show up, if you can treat people well, and they know that you care, there is going to be a shift. And there's this idea of fourth turnings, which I'm actually listening to a book right now. I don't know if you're ever familiar with this idea, but it's like every fourth generation kind of resets. And so there's like this fracturing. So there's a big moment right now, which we'll go through probably about 2030, of this distrust in big institutions. And you probably feel this with any conversation you have with people, like, hey, there's a lot of distrust. We need to make some changes. This isn't sustainable. Like these feelings, this has happened many other times in history. And I think the idea of coming back to this, I think the world is going more back to this collective versus individual. And there's positives and negatives to that, which we don't necessarily need to get into. And I won't get myself in trouble with opinions that people might not like. But it's coming back to, I think, the idea of being local and being someone in a community will continue to matter more, not less, into the future. And yeah, those are kind of my thoughts from that standpoint, which are sporadic and scattered, but hopefully that is cognitively somehow connected together to answer your question.
It is. And yeah, like I completely agree. That's one of our values, is like, we want to foster community. Fostering community. What are we doing to foster community? Because again, we heal in community. That's a huge component that we miss out on a lot of the time, but we heal in community, and there's definitely healing that needs to be done. So I love that.
So I have one last question. Like, so Canada just passed some interesting tax stuff recently. As a business owner, I will try not to get you in trouble from the powers that be in Canada, but any thoughts? Does that change anything for you?
Well, I'm trying to think of what it is.
Capital gains tax. It was a huge increase. Pretty wild.
I don't know. Well, see, okay, so my sister, she's a tax specialist, an accountant.
Good sister, like
she has, yeah, she has additional training in like tax specialty. So she just tells me what to do. So I don't actually follow it. That's one of the things. I was like, I feel like that's something that I can't put in my brain because it'll like put other stuff. But yeah, no, that's like, I haven't been following. She just tells us what to do, and she like moves the money or whatever, does this structuring she needs to. So I'm actually not even familiar. And I don't watch the news because, again, maybe along
not,
the same
it's
lines
not active
of like
recovery, right?
It's not exactly. It's not. It's like, what are you feeding yourself? Like, it's yeah. So yeah, I don't watch the news.
Good.
Yeah.
It was very, very recent. So I'm not
okay.
Like, I'm saying this week, I think, is when a lot of stuff got announced. So it.
Oh, maybe we'll get it in our financial plan with her. Yeah. She'll probably update us in our financial plan.
Open arms if you want to come to a more business friendly country. The United States needs more veterinarians as well.
Yeah, they do. And you know what? We were just in Mexico and I was like, oh, this is pretty nice.
Yeah.
maybe this is a good place to be. But yeah, no, definitely. That's interesting.
Yeah. Home is home though. And I get that.
There's
certain things that will keep you in an area. But all that to be said, super fascinating discussion. For those that maybe want to connect, chat, are you actively doing coaching with veterinarians? Like, I guess kind of shill or talk about how people can connect with you.
Yeah. Like, I'm on LinkedIn and I'm also on Instagram. So those are the two, I guess, like social media platforms that I try to post on actively. Again, it's not at the top of the priority list, but I'm there and you can reach out there. And then as far as like actively coaching at like an individual level, right now I'm actually looking at how to build some like training, and I'm working on some like webinars and group coaching, you know, because I've definitely looked at the one-on-one coaching thing, and I probably will in the future, but definitely right now my focus is on like, how can I reach as many people as possible, and how can I work with other employers, their teams, that kind of thing. So yeah, that's kind of what I've been working on since just the few months that I've been getting into this. But yeah,
love it. Well, thank you so much for coming on and sharing a lot of knowledge and insight, and yeah, I enjoyed it, and I know there'll be lots of people that also took a lot away, so thank you.
Great. Yeah, no, that's awesome. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to today's show. The comments made on today's show should not be taken as investment, tax, or legal advice. All comments are for educational purposes only. However, you are intelligent enough to make decisions for yourself. So I do encourage you to dig in, learn for yourself, and not just outsource every decision that you make. You should talk to your professional team if you have one before implementing anything that I talk about, but also make sure they know what they're talking about. Push them, question them. That's healthy. That's okay. Oh yeah, and you should probably own and learn a little bit about that Bitcoin thing. The biggest compliment you can give to me is to share the show with a friend or the podcast, if there's another episode that you really like. That helps folks find it. That helps it grow. Reviews are critical. The Apple Podcast is the platform that's predominantly used for how people find the show. So if you have 3 minutes, love the show, please head over, give us 5 stars if you believe that's what we earned. That would help more people find the show. Also, if you're new, go to YouTube. It's a channel, putting up all the videos there as well. Sometimes it's going to be more interactive. Other times it's just going to be the conversation. So vainly, I want to get 100 subscribers so I get the vanity URL. That's the goal. We're on our way, but not quite there yet. For all of today's links, information, head over to veterinariansuccesspodcast.com. There you can also subscribe via your favorite podcast platform so you won't miss any episodes in the future. And finally, if you'd like more information, insights, or have the ability for your voice to be heard, join the Facebook group. You can search for the Veterinarian Success Podcast on Facebook or head over to veterinariansuccesspodcast.com, scroll to the bottom, about your host, click on the Facebook icon. And thanks again for listening. I appreciate you. All right. So there are a lot of great job postings that I want to get to. And so we're going to start off with Bayside Hospital for Animals. Great work-life balance in beautiful Fort Walton Beach, Florida. No weekends, Monday to Friday, 8 to 5, no on-call or emergencies. It's appointment only here. Currently a 2.5 doctor practice, new owner in 2021, bringing some fresh life into the hospital. The new owner had been there for 6 years prior working, so definitely understands the team, the processes, and the community. Lots of investment in people and new equipment. ProSal is the pay structure. Far too many benefits for me to list. Email baysidevet251@yahoo.com or call 850-864-1857. Join a thriving, growing small animal practice in Vermont on the Quebec border. Full-time ideal, part-time is considered. The idea is to start with yes with the team, patients, and clients in outdoor woman's paradise while being able to practice high-quality medicine. Compensation is write your own structure within production capabilities. Literally, it is the owner wants to find the right person and is happy to negotiate, chat through, and find the right fit. If you want autonomy and a boss that enjoys teaching, reach out to Newport Veterinary Hospital. You can email newportveterinaryhospital@gmail.com. North Central Indiana, looking for an oasis in the chaos? Who isn't, right? Come join the amazing team at Fulton County Veterinary Clinic. They strive to foster a fun, fast-paced work environment while providing quality patient care. They utilize the support staff efficiently so that the doctor is available to practice medicine and do what you're trained to do in less time and paperwork, which is great. Lots of investment in new equipment and technology to support you, full-time or part-time available. Small animal and exotics are both seen there, so no ER, no on-call, no weekends, competitive salary with sign-on bonus offered, and far too many benefits to list. Go to Fulton County Veterinary Clinic. So type that in and you'll find the job posting there. Last but not least, join Watertown Animal Hospital. Personable, small animal veterinarian wanted for well-established current 5-doctor mixed animal practice in Northern New York, which is an outdoors person's paradise. Again, 2 of those. So if you like the outdoors, you can look at Vermont or New York. They have plenty of support staff with 6 CSRs, 6 licensed technicians, 4 animal caretakers, 2 technical assistants, hospital assistant, a practice manager, and a bookkeeper. Focuses on mentorship and investment on the people and the technology. That's been a strategic initiative by the leadership team. No on-call, 24-hour ER less than an hour away. Salary based on experience, but no less than $95,000. Can be straight salary, ProSal considered. Want to discuss that with the right person. Tons of benefits. Again, too much to list. Please reach out to watertownpetcare.com for that option as well. So again, if you find a role or a job or talk to anyone and it helps you in any way, I would love to hear that feedback. So please reach out. Let me know what you're able to do. And I will continue to post these. So if you are an owner, reach out to me, let me know, and we'll go from there. And until I hit a capacity of I can't keep recording these, I want to let people know who are high quality owners around the country looking for great help. So with that, we'll talk soon.